Well, welcome. Welcome to Holden. Oh, that's good. We don't need to hit it over onto the floor or something. That would be bad. Welcome to Session on the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Land, a mouthful that we otherwise call the ELCJHL.
Also a mouthful.
Also a mouthful. Yeah, just full of mouthfuls. And like I said in the session description, deep roots, broad mission. My name is Elizabeth McCann, or Ellie. I am a pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And through the Global Mission Program Unit, I serve as a pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Land. And I serve as communications assistant for the church and also for the bishop, Bishop Munib Younan, who is also at the moment president of the Lutheran World Federation. So can make for a busy, yeah, oh my goodness, yes. He is extremely busy at all points in time. But I get to have a lot of fun in this session today because I just get to talk to you about the church that I work in. And so I'm just going to give a brief little outline that describes a little bit about what the ELCJHL encompasses. And pretty much then I'm just going to kind of open it up to questions. What you'd like to learn about, things that you'd like to know about. And then in about the last 10 minutes, I'm going to introduce you all to a project that you may or may not know about that the ELCJHL started in January and show you a little video about that. So the ELCJHL. The ELCJHL is the only indigenous Lutheran church in the Middle East. It has six congregations, one in Jerusalem, four in other parts of the West Bank, just north of Jerusalem in Ramallah. Just south of Jerusalem, there's three congregations in an area that has remained quite Christian. In southern, just south of Jerusalem, in Bethlehem, Beit Jala, and Beit Sahur, which are three little towns, little cities that are on three hilltops right beside each other. Obviously Bethlehem is Bethlehem. Beit Sahur is traditionally where the shepherds were. And so where the angels would have appeared to the shepherds, and so they have a joke about Beit Sahurian people that the reason that everyone knew so quickly was because Beit Sahurians loved to talk and they loved to gossip, so they were the perfect people to tell as the shepherds. Because of course the news was going to get everywhere. And then Beit Jala, that's just on another little hilltop. And then the sixth congregation is actually in Amman, Jordan. Now, almost more importantly, or equally importantly, older than the congregations are the diaconal ministries of the ELCJHL. It is a church that is rooted first and foremost in service, and that is how it began. The Lutheran missions to the Holy Land started in the mid-1800s, about 1851, and they started as educational programs, as homes for orphans. There was no really mission to build a Lutheran church whatsoever. There was no mission to start congregations. It started with orphanage for girls, and was the first educational program in the area of historical Palestine for girls, and there was also a boys' orphanage. And from there grew schools. The first school, I think, started in 1856, which was Talita Kumi School. And it has grown to be that the ELCJHL has six congregations with 2,000 members. It also has four K-12 schools that educates 2,000 students every year. Obviously, there are not 2,000 students in 2,000 members. And so the schools of the ELCJHL, they're all in the West Bank. One is Hope School in Ramallah, which is yoked with the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Hope in Ramallah. One is Daryl Calime Lutheran School, which is in Bethlehem and is yoked with the church in Bethlehem, which is the Evangelical Lutheran Christmas Church in Bethlehem. There is Beit Sahur, Evangelical Lutheran School in Beit Sahur, which is yoked with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Beit Sahur, the only church congregation that doesn't have a different name, and so they get a very long mouthful. And then there is Talita Kumi Evangelical Lutheran School. Even though it has had to move, it was originally located in East Jerusalem, and in 1967 their property was taken over, and they were never given it back, and so the school ended up moving to Beit Jala. And so they work in some ways with the Evangelical Lutheran Church of the Reformation, which is in Beit Jala. So six congregations, four schools, we'll come back to them. Besides that, there are four educational programs that the ELCJHL, that is part of their ministries. There is a kindergarten, another school, a kindergarten on the Mount of Olives, that has a very wide range of students. There's normally five or six different languages that the teacher talks to the students. Mm-hmm. And they are just across the street from where I live, so it's fun. I get to pop in and see them a lot. There's Martin Luther Center, which offers a place in the middle of the old city of Jerusalem for seniors to come and gather, to have a place to spend and have time in community. There is the Environmental Education Center, which is one of the most prominent education centers about environmental issues in the West Bank. And I think more than 6,000 students have access to it every single year. The Palestinian Authority education system also plugs into that for the great work that it does. And what am I forgetting? Al-Mahaba. Oh, of course. And then there is also the Evangelical Lutheran Home for Boys. There isn't really a support system, a social, a governmental social support system in Palestine. And so when children, there isn't social services per se. And so especially, so the Evangelical Lutheran Home for Boys offers a place 10 months of the year where about 40 boys live full time. They live in family units, and their tuition is fully paid to the schools that they go to, and they are there for various different reasons. Some do not have parents. Some come from very difficult home life situations, and some just come from very impoverished families that are not able to provide care, and ask that the Home for Boys does that for them. It's a really brief overview. I'm going to jump back into our schools for a minute. As I said before, our schools, four K-12 schools, have 2,000 students in them, which is really amazing. And as I said before, there's only 2,000 people in the whole church, so obviously they're not all Lutheran. They're actually, the schools are about 50%, about 50-50 young men and young women. They are also about 50-50 Christian and Muslim. And peace education is a major component of the education in our schools. Gender balance, gender equality is very important as well. And the schools also very much strive to provide psychosocial care for the students and to make sure that the students have access to extracurricular activities, to sports, to art, to music, to all of these things that so often are swept by the wayside in a very difficult situation, but are incredibly important, the schools have found, for helping these children who live in a very difficult situation to find ways to express their emotions and safe places for them to play. As I said, there wasn't really a purpose in the beginning to start a church. It started with schools, it started with diaconia, with service. So how did the churches come about? The congregations in the ELCJHL all came about when students who had graduated from the ELCJHL schools, or I mean predecessor, it wasn't called ELCJHL until about 10 years ago, but when students who graduated from the Lutheran schools and the Christian students who had learned Lutheran theology all throughout and had Bibles placed in their hands and they'd read them lots, when they came back to the people who were running the schools and said, "You've taught us this Lutheran theology our whole lives. We're Lutheran. We don't feel like we fit, and this has become so much a part of our lives. We want congregations. We want places of worship here." And so that's how four of the congregations started: the Jerusalem congregation, Bethlehem, Beit Jala, and Beit Sahur; the Ramallah congregation and the Amman Jordan congregation started because that is where Lutheran refugees ended up from the 1948, and then another influx after 1967. A lot of Lutheran families from Jerusalem area, from other areas, ended up in Ramallah, which was a very large landing point for refugees after 1948. Jordan was also a very major landing place for Palestinian peoples who were refugees. And so the congregation, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Hope in Ramallah, just celebrated its 50th anniversary just before I came here. And so that was lots of fun. And their congregation, the Church of Hope, started from these refugee families who approached the Lutheran Church and said, "This is now where we're living. We need a congregation here. And this community needs your presence here. This community needs your work here and needs a school here. And we want to help make that happen." And so that community started with a congregation, and I think in the second year of the congregation, they'd already started a kindergarten, and they added one grade level each year until they were offering the School of Hope in Ramallah right now. It has about 500 students. Earlier this year in February, they just broke ground on a new school building because they have outgrown their capacity, and so the European Union and the Palestinian Authority have joined together to say, you know what, the Lutheran schools do good work, they offer great education, and so they are paying for the construction of the first phase of the new building. There's three phases of construction for the new building, for the church, for the school in Ramallah. Once it is finished, the school in Ramallah will be able to have 1,500 students in it alone. Also with the schools, the ELCJHL employs more than 200 educators. And I had a chance, because it's not working, it's not gonna work great, but I had a chance to sit down with a few of our teachers just a few weeks ago. They were finishing up a leadership training course that they've been doing for the last 3 years. And so I sat down with Afra, who's one of our teachers at the Beit Sahur School, and was talking to her. She's actually Greek Orthodox, is her background. And her husband is Greek Catholic, so Melkite. But her husband had grown up in the Lutheran schools, and she had grown up in a Catholic school, actually, I think. And when it came time to send their students to school, her husband was like, I really want to send them to the Lutheran schools. And Ofra was like, no, I grew up in the Catholic school, I want my kids to go there. But Ofra ended up teaching at the ELCJHL school in Beit Zohar. And she sat there talking to me, and she said, you know what? I was here, and I was seeing all of the extracurricular activities, all of the aftercare that the students here were getting, and just how very much this place was a community. And I was seeing my daughter in her school and having none of that. And she admitted to me, she said, so I had to go to my husband and say, so I think maybe we should move the kids to the Lutheran school. And he was like, yes, I win! But she also told me that that her family had planned to move to the States. Christian emigration is a major problem in the area. Again, it's mixed. Christians are some, on general, are often some of the most educated Palestinian people. They also more tend to live in towns, which is part of the reason behind their higher education. Palestinians in general will tell you very much that education is one of their main priorities. And when I ask them why, they say, well, they can take away our houses, they can take away our families, they can take away our freedom of movement, but they cannot take away our education. It's the one thing we cannot have taken away from us. And so they cherish it very much. The problem is, though, you go and you go to university, maybe you go away, you get a scholarship to do a master's degree somewhere else, and then what? The doorman at the Jerusalem congregation, who sits there every single day and has for the last 18 years, his name is Maurice. He's a very dear man. It is his job to welcome people into the sanctuary and to show them how to walk up the tower because there's one of the best views of the old city from our tower. And I sat talking with Maurice a couple months in and asked him about his background. Maurice speaks three languages completely fluently. Smatterings of others. And he has a master's in engineering, in, I think, chemical engineering, from Russia. But he decided it was more important to stay in Palestine and to stay with his family and to be there in that place, even though that he wouldn't be able to find work there. But it is very, very tempting, and various different things make it tempting. When you ask Palestinian Christians especially why they have chosen to emigrate, there are three main answers that they normally give. One is the unstable political situation, lack of jobs or employment. And don't tell me I'm gonna blank on the third one. I am at the moment. I'll come back to it. But back to Ofra for a second. As I said, Ofra, the teacher at Beit Zohar, she was planning on moving her family to the States. And she said, but then I got a job here at the Lutheran school in Beit Zohar. And it's a family. And she said that all of her fellow teachers from other places, some from the schools, some from outside in the communities, said to her with that job after a couple years in it, well, why would you ever move? Why would you leave that school and why would you leave that place? And she said that the reason she has not moved is because of the job and the community there. And some people look at the ELCJHL and they will look at our budget and look at the fact that 75% of our budget is spent on salaries. And a lot of our international partners at times will say, well, you know, you gotta cut that down. Salaries can't be that much. Can't be that much of the budget. But that is also a part of the ministry of the ELCJHL, is the community and the jobs it provides and the very important social work that is a part of the fabric of Palestinian society. Christians are. They may be a small population. They're now down to about 1.4% of the population. I think they were close to about 20% in the early 1900s. So they're down to 1.4%. But they are still very much viewed as an integral part of the fabric of Palestinian society and an integral part of the social systems and social supports. Yeah. Okay. Enough of me being a talking head. I'm hoping that maybe sparked some questions that you want to follow up with, because of course I can't tell about the whole church in an hour, so I figured.
If all this money is going to salaries for teachers to teach kids, which is obviously a very good thing, what do they think you should be spending the money on?
In general, because of the lack of employment opportunities, it's very difficult at this point in time for our schools to be self-sustaining. Students and families of students aren't able to pay tuition fees that would actually cover the cost of the salaries. The cost of tuition for ELCJHL schools covers from school to school, it varies, but it covers anywhere between one-third and one-half of the actual cost of the student. So that's the tuition fee, the top that they would be asked to be paid. From there on, almost every student receives additional scholarship funding based on need. From anywhere from 10% up to the boys who live in our home for boys receive 100% tuition. And so that is where the problem comes, is that it is very difficult for the ELCJHL on its own to balance its budget. And so it is dependent on its international partners. And that is something very much that the ELCJHL is working on and working toward self-sustainability. But when you're in the midst of an occupied territory in which there is incredibly limited employment opportunities, it's very difficult to do that.
How much is tuition?
Tuition ranges between the schools, ranges between, I think between 3,000 and 5,000 shekels per year. Right now the shekel's sitting at about $3.50. So I think it's between about $400 and $700 tuition for the year.
Question, you said that the boys' school goes 10 months. You also said some of those boys have no family. What happens for them for those 2 months?
Mm-hmm. That's another difficult question that we're dealing with. We do have some families who take in some of the boys for the summer. The boys who do have families do spend the summer with them. Part of it comes down to funding and an inability to...
So there's a mission need there.
Pardon?
There's a mission need there.
Oh, there's a mission need just about everywhere. But yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What kind of religious education do the Muslim students get?
Within our schools, religious education is offered to all. Christian students go to Christian religious education, Muslim students go to Muslim religious education, but one thing that is unique about our schools, or at least that I haven't heard about in any of the other ones, is that once a month they have the classes combined. And they get a chance, so they do get a chance really to learn about one another's religions and to have conversations from a very, very young age and know each other very well.
I'm just wondering a little bit about the relationship between the Palestinian Authority and mm-hmm. the church. Like, are your schools using BA curriculum? Are they subject to those? And then it sounds like the teachers are paid by the church. Mm-hmm. So does that mean when Israel freezes Palestinian tax money and civil servants throughout the territories aren't getting paid, your teachers are still mm-hmm. receiving their salaries?
Yeah. Private schools within the Palestinian Authority at this point in time don't receive any funding help. And so the schools are completely funded on their own. As Heidi was referring to, you know, when Palestinian Authority funds get frozen, which Israel threatened and held for a while earlier this year, when the reconciliation was brokered between Hamas and Fatah, for a while Israel was just like, well, fine, then we're just not gonna pay you any of the tax money, that it's actually the Palestinians who are paying that tax money. So there's, you know, some ethical questions in that. There was, although, one point in time this year in our schools in which we had to ask our teachers to wait a couple weeks to be paid simply because we had no funds as a church. But our teachers also have one of the best retirement pension plans offered to any teachers in the West Bank. As for curriculum, for the most part, the ELCJHL doesn't strictly use PA curriculum. In the very last year, which is called Taujihi, there's different ways in which you can go. So our Tali Takumi school actually offers a way that you can get a German graduating certificate that would allow you to go to any university in Germany. That's how fluent the kids get at Tali Takumi if they're in that program. Most of the other schools offer the normal Palestinian Taujihi, which is the end year of exams. So for that year in particular, they have to use full PA authority curriculum. And normally they get to that year and they're like, we're bored.
I don't know what the size of the Christian community is in Israel, but do you get any support from Christian organizations in Israel?
There are 13 different Christian bodies in the Jerusalem area, representing all four of the families I'm also going to both Catholic, Protestant, Eastern Orthodox, and Russian Orthodox. But there are 13 different bodies, and they all have their different their different stuff and their different ministries. They're all very involved. And so, yeah, there isn't really other ones.
Yeah. I'm just curious about education in general. Like, you were mentioning that couple decided whether to send their child to the, you know, Lutheran school or to the Catholic school. Mm-hmm. What are the options for parents? Like, because here a Lutheran school would be a choice to not go into the public education system.
Right. In Palestine in general, the private schools are always going to have more.
But there are public schools?
There are Palestinian Authority schools. There are UNRWA schools, United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Refugees in the Middle East, in the Near East. I'm not a political science person, so I'll try and say this in normal terms, but as far as my understanding is, when a country occupies land, it is responsible for paying for the education, for paying for health, and for paying for basic things. That isn't really the case. Especially in East Jerusalem, schools are a major problem for Palestinians. East Jerusalem would be the east side of the Green Line, the 1949 Armistice Line, the pre-1967 borders. In East Jerusalem in particular, there are simply not enough schools. They do two shifts a day, and so you only get to go to school if you're going to the public schools for 2 to 3 hours in a day. And there are simply some students that don't have a place at a school. And so there are a lot of students that fall through the cracks. And so that is why, and because Palestinians value education so much, that if they can at all, they will probably try and find somewhere else to send their students. And it is also for those reasons that we try our best to offer as many full scholarships as possible or to work with parents in education possibilities.
So maybe a little off the track, but is Israel trying to make it so tough for the Palestinians that they really want to go someplace else so that they can just sort of get them by attrition?
In my humble opinion and from my time there, I would say yes. Because if it's easier to go somewhere, then it's easier that absent tenants, absent landlords, and it especially I'll get into some more of these issues in my discussion tomorrow, which will be on the walls, checkpoints, housing demolitions, Jerusalem. And once you leave, especially if you leave Jerusalem, if you're out for too many years, your Jerusalem ID will be taken away from you, and you will never be allowed to live in Jerusalem again.
First of all, I had a question. You said that the churches were formed by sort of graduates of these schools.
Mm-hmm.
Did the churches form independently, or when did this church body that included Jordan and this whole thing, how did that happen?
Good question. The churches began, when was the first one? The churches began over the years. The last churches being Church of Hope in Ramallah and Church of the Good Shepherd in Amman, Jordan, which were after refugees. Up until I think 77, there was a German Propst that was in charge of the area. And in 77, so the churches all started connected to the Lutheran Church. They didn't start on their own. They started with requests and started as official congregations in these different places. But 1977 was the first time, was when the church was completely handed over to the Palestinian indigenous Lutherans. And that was the first time in which a Palestinian bishop became bishop. We have had three Palestinian bishops now, my bishop being the third. He has been bishop since 1998. It was called the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan. They didn't actually change it until into the early 2000s because of the fact that between 48 and 67, Jordan was in control of the West Bank, which included East Jerusalem. So all the congregations technically were in Jordan at that point in time. The early 2000s, they're like, okay, how do we talk about ourselves? How do we do this? And so it was at that point in time in which they very carefully decided that they wanted to change their name to the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Land. ELCJHL has been a major worker with the Lutheran World Federation for decades. I think they have been a member since the 70s. And then just received interim membership, awaiting hopefully full membership next summer in the World Council of Churches, which was actually Normally, to be a church body in the World Council of Churches, you have to have at least 50,000 members. And there are very particular reasons that normally have to do with diaconia service and the ministries and mission of a church for it to be considered when it's smaller. And so there was a group that came down in February to get to see all of our ministries. And when they went back, their unanimous recommendation was that the ELCJHL be invited into membership in the World Council of Churches based on its ministries.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sorry.
Go right ahead.
What does worship look like? What languages are spoken?
Right, yeah. The ELCJHL is an Arabic-speaking church. There is a seventh congregation that is part of the Arabic-speaking congregation in Jerusalem that is an English-speaking congregation within that. But all six congregations that have six Palestinian Lutheran pastors who have been educated all over the world, Theological School of the Near East in Lebanon, in Makumira in Tanzania. One actually spent a year with me at Wartburg Seminary a few years ago, so I actually knew Pastor Saliba Rishmawi before I went, and another pastor did his was brought over and did his Lutheran year at Southern Seminary here and within the ELCA. All the congregations are Arabic speaking. Their services are full in Arabic. I have at least learned how to do the chanting parts in Arabic, which has been really, really fun. I hope to learn a lot more. They are liturgical churches grounded in a German liturgical pattern, and so they all use a, kind of a chant-based liturgy that has been translated into Arabic. As a lot of mission churches are, and slowly, I think, come to claim their own music, a lot of mission churches, when missionaries went in originally, they went in with their German chorales and said, this is how you do music in a Lutheran church. I'm really glad that our church is learning to really embrace global music and global Lutheranism. The ELCJHL is still a lot of German chorales translated into Arabic, and they are just in the last couple of years, they have made it one of their priorities, along with a new candidacy manual about how leaders are lifted up for ordained ministry, including, I'll come back in one second, remind me about ordained ministry and I forget, but ordained ministry, but also have brought, just in the last year, are bringing and approving a new lay consecrated and are looking especially to lift up musicians and to bring that more in. Back to the ordained piece for one little second, because this is really fun. In January of 2010, the Fellowship of Middle East Evangelical Churches, another acronym which we call FEMEEC, unanimously voted in support of women's ordination. And the ELCJHL's new candidacy manual that has been in the works in the last year is fully and completely open to women's ordination. Our first female graduate is actually coming home to start working on August 1st. Dina Tanous, and she went through LSTC, did you?
I went to Wartburg with her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she came over when she was 17, did college at Wartburg College. She did a master and an MA in theology at LSTC, but she didn't go through the full MDiv because she knew that if at some point in time she did want to go into ordained ministry, that she would need to do internship within the ELCJHL. She has been working with the Chicago Synod and with Global Mission. She herself is still discerning whether or not she really feels called to ordained ministry. But she she has decided that she wants to come home. And so she's going to work this year as she kind of continues to discern that journey of whether she's looking for lay consecrated or ordained or how she feels called into ministry. But it would be exciting for myself to be able to be, I have a feeling that no matter where I am in the world or when it happens, I will fly back to be present at the ordination of the first Palestinian woman in the ELCJHL.
Mm-hmm. How does the Palestinian culture do the gay issue?
They don't really admit that it exists. And that's pretty much the extent. It's simply not talked about, and they don't, and in a lot of ways there are an extreme number of extremely pressing issues dealing with food, dealing with water, dealing with getting from day to day. Theologically, those are some pretty major issues to tackle on a day-to-day basis. I think that that those are the important issues for them to be talking about right now. Being there and in their midst. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly or right, or if it's coming out, because I mean, for me here in this place and in this church, has been a major issue and something that I've been very involved in. But when it comes to not having food, not having access to water, having to buy your water back from Israel, and the theological issues of occupation, and the fact that children grow up never feeling safe. They grow up knowing that their parents can't really protect them. And so those are some major things that the church has decided to put first and foremost at this point in time.
As an employee of the church, are you given a work visa to live in?
I'm glad you asked that, because my work visa makes me laugh every single day. According to Israel, I am a clergy man. There is no even thought of a non-gendered clergy visa or the option that someone could be a female. So in my passport, when I got it back, with my visa in it, and I opened it up, I just had to laugh because it says in my passport, clergy man. I'm like, huh. Well then, it's a year-to-year visa. We actually had some visa problems coming in. There was some question. Israel kind of threatened to send us out for 6 months, even though they told us, and the norm is always that you don't have to have clergy visas before you come in. You can apply for them when you're there. We have some great people who work with the ELCJHL who help us with visas, and so I actually didn't have to deal with it at all. They dealt with it, and I never even had to go and see anyone. But I will be up again in October for having to go through the process again. Oftentimes, they'll let it slide up to about 5 years, and after that, every clergy person that I've talked to, when it comes around to renewing the visa time, they're just like, are we going to have to move? Are we going to have to leave? And actually, right now, in the Anglican Church, there are only 2 Palestinian bishops out of the 13 churches. That is the Lutheran bishop and the Anglican bishop, Bishop Suhail Gulani. And in the last couple of months, Bishop Suhail's residency permit for Jerusalem has been revoked. Mm-hmm. And Israel has said, nope, you can't live in Jerusalem. I don't care if that's where the head of your church is and if that's where you're supposed to be acting as bishop. But you were born in Nablus and we decided you can't live in Jerusalem anymore. So, and there was also another one of his assistants, an Anglican priest, or Episcopalian priest from the States, who did have to leave earlier this year, and it took 3 or 4 months before he was able to come back in. So visa issues are definitely an issue. They're kind of part of it. We're to the last 10 minutes, and so I would love to, if you don't mind watching on here, because I really want to show this to you, because it actually gives you a chance to see and to hear. I had the great pleasure of having a coworker this last year who is a pastor in the United Church of Christ. And her husband was doing a year at Hebrew University, and so she was my counterpart as assistant to the director of education, assistant to bishop. One of the major areas in which we simply have a void in the schools is English language books and reading material. And if we do have reading material, it's normally things that people have boxed up when someone died and said, oh, I think overseas missions could use this. And so, you know, it's like 1950s books. Books that definitely do not represent anything that is accurate or useful in a lot of areas. And so we have had a program that started in January called the ELCJHL Libraries Project, opening a world of possibilities. And it's a way that has been set up that has empowered our teachers to pick the books that would be most useful to them. And then through Amazon, which lets you set up your own store and to populate it with whatever you want, to put the books on there and to open it up to the world. Wartburg Theological Seminary in Dubuque, Iowa has partnered with us. And so if people go onto the Amazon site and choose the books that they want, they can have they pay for them, and they enter Wartburg's address, send them to Wartburg. And then Wartburg Seminary collects them, inventories them for us, and then we work with Wartburg and with groups that are coming over. And we invite groups that are coming over to bring these books. So the only cost that is spent by the actual project is shipping costs from Wartburg Seminary to somewhere in the States, to the groups who are bringing the books over. Last check, I think we'd had $4,000 of books bought since January, and more than 1,000 books. Cool. And you'll see on this, one of the teachers at the end explains how excited the kids are, and they love it. And not only do they love that they have new reading material, but they love how the expressions of their worth and their value, and that someone is thinking about them outside. And so, just this little video that we put together to introduce the project. Skip. I don't know what you're asking me to do, but let's skip. And move it. Oops, one second. What are you doing? Oh, you still have this, which is why you don't like me. A lot better. So you just won't even try to put it up there. Unless it's gonna be weird. You.
Started teaching me like the alphabets and stuff since I was in kindergarten. and I think that helped me in a way.
It's cool. My English is good because of school, English movies, songs, and travel, of course.
I think that it's important for Palestinian kids to learn English because English is an international language, and it helps a lot in job opportunities, and it helps a lot when someone travels abroad. I love English. So the only main libraries that we have, or like libraries which have lots of books, are in Jerusalem and on the other side. And we cannot get there because we don't have permission, so we can get the good books and everything.
I almost read all of these books in the library. I was in this school for 5 years, and every day I took a book, and I almost read this book. And we don't have a lot of books, so if you can, to bring us new books, because these are old.
And it's a bit expensive for us, because my family, we are 5 children, so I think it's hard for us to afford to buy an English book.
It's very important for our school to have a library, because we are not able to get any book we want from any library we wish, because there aren't libraries here in our country.
Read that thing.
What kinds of books would you like to see in your library?
I would like to have something that, it's for different ages, so the little children enjoy it, and I enjoy it, and the bigger than me enjoy it. So it's not for only one age.
I like history books and cartoon books. I like cartoon so much.
History of the world in English. That's really good.
Special novels, stories, short stories.
It would be good to have books about medicine here in our school, because this will help me in university and to know more about medicine. Everything. Literature, encyclopedias, dictionaries and everything.
What do you wish the world knew about Palestinians?
I would like everybody to know that we Palestinians are really suffering from the occupation. We can't go to other places in Palestine or any places. And I would like to have freedom and go wherever I want to, and that's it for me.
I want the world to know that Palestinian people are good people, and they're not like the way media shows them.
Well, I would tell the world that Palestinians are really civilized. I mean, like, not that we live in tents or like tents. We're really cool. I mean, we listen to English music, we read English books.
We're warm people. We welcome everyone that comes to Palestine. It's not what the media says.
And so my little message is, you cannot plant love and freedom in a specific place. You have to plant it everywhere so as to grow with a meaning and with joy and love and with all its meaningful purpose. And we just hope to get that someday.
What does the gift of books mean to the students?
I've already told my kids about it. They're so happy. They brought me tons of lists that I'm going to send for them. And they keep asking me, Miss, where are the books? Miss, where are the books? Tell them thank you. We appreciate it. We really appreciate that someone outside Palestine is thinking about us and want to help us. It means that we are important. We are worthy. And it's very important for our students to feel that they are worthy, that someone really cares.
And that's Lisa. She's one of the English teachers at Bethlehem, at the Bethlehem School. And her kids were so excited about new books and about the fact that all these books were coming in from other people that they were inspired to tell all their relatives who live outside of Palestine to say, hey, can you send us books? And they actually brought in their own pocket money, shekel by shekel, and gave it to Lisa and said, they own all the English books that you can actually buy at the one English language educational bookstore in Jerusalem. And so they said, Miss Lisa, if we give this to you, can we give this to you for the libraries project? And can books be bought through the website and people bring them over so we can have new books? And so this isn't just something that is from the outside. This is something that the students and teachers have a lot of ownership in. If you're interested in the project, there is educational materials that you can use. This video is also on our YouTube page, and all of this can be found if you go to the elcjhl.org website. If you go to support our ministries and the libraries project, there's a link to the website there too, even if you just want to take a look.
Processing some of the information. You said that these kids are equipped to go to college in Germany. How can they get permission to go to Germany?
With our schools, we have a lot of very good relationships with people. And we have students that go to university in many places abroad.
Really?
And I'd probably say the large majority of our students do go on to university.
I didn't realize they could even leave the country. I don't really know much about it. Either.
You can leave the country. Whether or not you can get back in.
Okay.
they don't really mind if Palestinians
right.
leave.
Yeah, that's the right attitude.
Yeah. Thanks very much. You'll get to hear little snippets of this. There will be snippets from this in Vespers tonight, and I got to work with the Narnia kids this morning, and they wrote letters back. And so their letters are going to be our bidding prayers tonight. So, yeah. Thanks very much.
Thank you.